United States v. Wilburn, Mr. Nguyen.
May it please the court. My name is Alexander Nguyen and I represent the defendant appellant Timothy Wilburn in this appeal. This is a case in which police, in order to seize guns from Mr. Wilburn's personal duffel bag without having to apply for a warrant, asked his girlfriend Taylor for consent to search the apartment. She said yes, but her yes was ineffective for two reasons. First, to overcome her resistance, police promised to limit their search to his private belongings only, not hers. Thus, she could not consent as a matter of law. Second,
why do you assume she had no apparent authority over things that were his? I mean, suppose he had a pot in the kitchen that was his favorite pot, but it's an area that they both control.
Your Honor, you're asking about mutual access and joint use.
Right. A closet has some of her clothes and some of his clothes. You know, they're not going to take hers, but she can give access to that area, can't she?
Your Honor, the facts specifically relating to the duffel bag in this instance showed that Mr. Wilburn had taken affirmative precautions to keep that duffel bag private.
But you say that, but as I understood the government's brief, anyway, please correct me if I'm wrong, the closet did have items belonging to both of them in there. There was no marking on the duffel bag. It wasn't locked. There was nothing that should have alerted the police to know that only he and not she had control over it.
Your Honor, there are cases that basically say that consent to a search of a shared space does not necessarily extend to all closed containers within it. Given that fact, and given that the police in this instance specifically, in crystal clear language, limited their search to Mr. Wilburn's private belongings only, at the very least, they should have been put on notice that she may not have the requisite authority to consent to a search.
Even if she doesn't speak up and say, oh, that's not my duffel bag, don't open it or something?
That's correct, Your Honor.
The Supreme Court said in the Randolph case that if you get consent from a co-tenant, you don't have to go looking for the other co-tenants to see whether they consent, right?
That's correct. That has to do with the actual apartment search.
Why is that limited to the apartment search? I mean, again, how hard do the police have to work for each closed item in an apartment, let's say, as we have here, whether it's a duffel bag or whether it's a suitcase or a briefcase or a desk that opens and closes or anything else, when the co-tenant is there? And it's at least not something obvious like, a very feminine-looking lady's purse that you might assume didn't belong to Mr. Wilburn. But we don't have something like that here, do we?
That's correct, Your Honor. I think the public policy consideration is you do not want to make police have to ask about each and every item in the house. However, in this case, the police specifically limited their search to his items only. Looking at the bag, it was buried in the back of the closet, tucked behind several boxes, and so at the very least, police should have been put on notice that his girlfriend did not have the requisite authority to ask. In other words, Your Honor, the police cannot define the scope of their search narrowly to overcome her resistance to the search, and then after the fact, define it broadly enough to profess a reasonable uncertainty about whether or not she would have consent to search
the bag. I still don't see how the rule you're arguing for can be understood as anything but that the police can't open anything until they turn to her and ask and say, is this yours? And if she says yes, then they can open it. And if she says no, then they can't. Sounds like that's the rule you want.
Your Honor, I'm not asking for a rule that broadly. However, in United States versus Waller, for example, not only did the police not express any interest in her personal belongings in the apartment, they actively disclaimed any such interest in the search.
Just given blanket consent? Would be a better case for you or worse case?
If she had given blanket consent, I believe you would still have to look at the nature of the container
I don't understand you. The nature of the container? What do you mean? Big, small, what?
No, Your Honor, there's an objective standard, an objective expectation of privacy in various kinds of containers that courts have extended an expectation of privacy to, such as suitcases, duffel bags.
I don't understand you. When a co-tenant gives consent to search, it's just consent. Even though it's blanket consent, it's just consent to what? To search things in which the suspect would not have a reasonable expectation of privacy? I don't understand you.
In this case, Your Honor, the combined, coupled with the fact that the police specifically limited their search to Mr. Wilburn's possessions only.
I asked you whether it would make a difference if she gave blanket consent to the search.
In other words, if her consent was covered not only the physical interior of the apartment, but all closed containers inside it. She said, search anything, open anything, you know, search away.
If that had been the consent, then Mr. Wilburn would have a more challenging case before this court. However, in this case, again, the police specifically...
I don't understand that. I mean, what difference does it make whether she says, yeah, you can search anywhere you want, except not my stuff, right? You're searching my stuff. Why should the fact that she doesn't want her own stuff searched enhance his rights?
Because, Your Honor, police have a charge with a reasonable, they should know, should have a, be able to tell. Courts impose on police a reasonable expectation under the apparent authority doctrine.
My question, what difference should it make whether she says search everything or she says search everything except my bathroom or something, right? My closet. I don't want you pointing around my dresses, right? So why should that make a difference?
Because looking at what police actually know and whether or not their belief that she has authority to grant a search is reasonable.
What difference would it make if she says search everything or she says search everything except my purse? Why would that make a difference?
Because
anything to do with the Fourth Amendment?
Because the narrow scope of the scope as delimited by the police would put them on notice that she may not...
You're not listening to me at all. What is the practical difference between giving blanket consent and saying you can search everything, but I don't want you searching in my purse, or I don't want you looking through my hair, or something like that?
In other words, you know, she's just deleted something from the set of everything, and why isn't, if you're going to agree she has the authority to say search everything, why can't she say search everything minus one?
Because, Your Honor, under those circumstances, it goes to the intent to what police actually knew they would have been able to search.
Well, she gave a consent to search for weapons, didn't she?
Yes, Your Honor.
She had some question, and they explained, well, we're just looking for weapons. Said, oh, okay, then you can go and search.
That's correct, Your Honor, but the police also said specifically that they were not interested in her belongings.
That's the Judge Posner's question about rummaging through her dress or something like that. She was concerned about that, but not about anything else.
Yeah, under those circumstances, again, Your Honors, the police should have been put on notice and therefore did not have any apparent authority to grant the search of her duffel bag. I'm going to reserve my time.
Thank you, Mr. Nguyen. Mr. Koenig?
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Jonathan Koenig. I'm an assistant United States attorney in Milwaukee, and I appear on behalf of the government.
So what's your conception of the scope of this very confusing Randolph case?
Your Honor, my understanding of the Randolph case is that it announced both a rule and a corollary. The rule being that if you have a potential defendant who's physically present and objecting, third-party consent is no good. The corollary to that rule would be that the police cannot, and I want to be sure I get the language right, remove a potentially objecting defendant from the entrance for the sake of avoiding a possible objection.
So what I'm visualizing is that your image of this is that the police can't go up to a door with two people standing in it and physically lift one of them up and drag them away so that they can't say anything. But if the police in any other way arrange for the incapacity of the two people to stand together, that's fine?
Your Honor, I wouldn't go that far. I would deny that the officers in this case, you know, conspired to keep Mr. Wilburn and Ms. Taylor apart.
Why doesn't it look exactly like that, though? They have him, you know, detained. They don't let her get up to him. They make sure they can't communicate, right?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's important to understand how the facts unfolded here. From Ms. Taylor's perspective, she was headed out of the apartment to meet with Mr. Wilburn so they could go to the laundromat. That came out in her trial testimony. The officers didn't even know that she was at the apartment when they were conducting surveillance, at least as far as the record reflects. And so what happened is they see Mr. Wilburn take off in the truck. He drives around the block. They follow him. If they had really wanted to separate these two people so as to prevent Mr. Wilburn from voicing an objection, it seems to me they would have pulled him over somewhere on the far side of the block instead of directly in front of the apartment. That doesn't change the fact that he was some 40 feet away from the colloquy with Ms. Taylor. And the rule articulated in Randolph is very narrowly drawn, as is the corollary to the rule. Excuse me. The objector who is nearby but not invited, in the words of the court, loses out. And that's what we had here. That's what we had in Matlock.
But, of course, you could shout over the distance of 40 feet. It's not really that far.
I would submit, Your Honor, that Mr. Wilburn was at least as absent as Mr. Matlock. And one can agree or disagree with the rule that's articulated in Randolph, the fine line.
How many police were there? How many police officers were there?
There were three or four, Your Honor.
So a couple stayed with, two of them stayed with Wilburn in the police car and the other two went to the door. Is that what happened?
I believe it was one officer, Detective Simonis, who remained with Mr. Wilburn in the squad car.
And the three went to?
And the other two, Your Honor, Officer Gajevic and Officer Detman were the ones who proceeded to encounter Ms. Taylor on the sidewalk.
That's three, not four. Yeah.
Three, and then there was an Officer Bishop who showed up at some point, but the record is not very clear as to when. So the facts of this case do not fit either the rule in Randolph or the corollary. Mr. Randolph was not physically present, and he wasn't objecting, although he could, from his vantage point, see what was going on, unlike Mr. Randolph, who was at the doorway saying, no, you can't come in. He was not objecting, and indeed there's no reason to suppose that he would have objected had he been asked for his consent.
Well, there's no reason to suppose otherwise either, of course. I'm sure the officers were fairly candid. They said, yeah, we want to keep them apart. It sort of fell in their lap, maybe, but...
Except that he was very eager to cooperate once he realized he was in trouble.
Well, of course. So, but, you know, that suggests maybe he would have said, don't search the apartment, go back and get a warrant or something.
Fair enough, Your Honor.
Could they have gotten a warrant? Was there probable cause to search the apartment?
No, sir, I doubt that there was probable cause. The information that they had was that Mr. Wilburn was a convicted felon. The anonymous tip was that he was carrying a gun around and that he was living with a woman named Sophie at this address. There wasn't any information that tied the gun to the address, Your Honor. Just concluding on the Randolph issue, I would say that it's a precedent that doesn't really call out for creative application by the lower courts.
Well, but you know what? I have to register a little bit of an objection here. When the government is talking about searches, you know, out in the street or Terry frisks or automobiles or things like that, it strikes me that it's one thing. When the government is trying to expand its rights to go into somebody's home and search it, this is a very serious point. You're right at the core of the Fourth Amendment at that point, and I think the Supreme Court's decision in Randolph reflects that concern with searching a home. Now, if it's bona fide consent, that's fine. Everybody understands that people are entitled to waive rights. They're entitled to consent if they want to. But when you're talking about searching homes, I think it's entirely consistent with the Fourth Amendment to proceed carefully.
Your Honor, I wouldn't disagree with a word that you just said, and if I was trivializing the core values of the Fourth Amendment in any way, I apologize. And what I would just say is that the government in this case is certainly not pushing for any more than it got in the Randolph decision, which was not a lot. We just don't think that the facts of this case fit with Randolph.
Okay.
And I would be happy to answer any questions on the armed career criminal issue or the container search, but unless there are such questions.
So his juvenile adjudication, was that beyond a reasonable doubt?
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you have a lawyer?
I'm not sure of the facts of his particular case, but in 1982 in Wisconsin, juvenile defendants had the right to counsel, the right to fair notice, the right to proof beyond a reasonable doubt, and the option for a jury trial. Again, I don't know if that was exercised in this particular case. But.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Carter.
Thank you.
Mr. Noyan, how much time does he have? 1 minute? Do you have anything further you want to say?
Your Honors, just briefly on the Randolph issue. Mr. Wilburn's issue isn't that police failed to invite him to the threshold colloquy. The law doesn't require the police to do that. It is that the police, in this case, deliberately and affirmatively prevented him.
Well, that means that they anticipated the Supreme Court decision in Randolph.
Your Honor, Mr. Randolph, at this time, it's more the goes towards the actions. They, from the beginning, it was a gun investigation. They affirmatively were, quote-unquote, safekeeping Mr. Wilburn with them to avoid tipping their hand.
Look, they had a perfect right to arrest him, right? Didn't have a license. So why did they have to take him out of the police car? I don't understand. They've arrested him properly. He's in the police car. That's what they usually do with people. Why would they have to take him out and take him to the front door?
Your Honor, from the beginning, it was clear that this investigation of Mr. Wilburn was a gun investigation. So even though it was an arrest, it was still with the intent of searching.
That's fine. We don't look into the motive of arresting people. If they commit a crime, they can be arrested. And they're put in the police car, and it would be a special privilege if he could say, well, you know, I'm not going to stay. I can't stay in the police car. I have to be brought to my front door so I can refuse to consent to a search. I don't get that.
Your Honor, may I answer this question?
Sure, if you can.
Police in this case, usually police intent is irrelevant for these searches, but Randolph leaves the issue of police intent open. Warrantless searches are presumptively unreasonable, and they are the exception rather than the norm, and we would ask that the court reverse his conviction. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Noyan. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes.
So we thank you for accepting the appointment, and the court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.